Eddie Lindenstein from the Eddie Knows Fitness podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in today. So today I am interviewing Lee Johnson. So Lee Johnson has a company in England, Ipswich, England, called GoPainGo.com. And so what he does is that he's got a background in psychology and human exercise and neurolinguistics and things like that. But he works with people to cure chronic pain issues. And his story is kind of similar to mine in the sense that he went through all this stuff that he prescribes for his clients. And he does one-on-one coaching sessions with them to rid them of chronic pain problems. He was very active. He did weightlifting. He did boxing. He did a lot of these things. And then he started having chronic pain issues about 12 years ago. So his was actually around for 2 or 3 years before he was able to get rid of it. So this interview is awesome, and it's cool that it's with somebody on the other side of the planet too. People have these issues all over. So as I've said in the past, I've got my one-on-one coaching program. I've talked to a lot of potential clients recently, particularly in Canada. I actually talk about that in the podcast, but I've been getting a lot of potential clientele from Ontario, like the eastern side of Canada, which is great to hear from those people. And then quite a few from California too, even my home area code of 530. So that's been awesome to see too. So this is my interview with Lee, and I hope you enjoy it. And again, you can find me on Instagram, Eddie Lindenstein. You can find me on YouTube and Facebook by searching Eddie Knows Fitness, and then eddieknowsfitness.com, and then, of course, this podcast that you're listening to. All right, here's Lee Johnson. I am here with Lee Johnson. Lee, how are you?
Very well, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm good. So Lee is he's a mind-body specialist that you're in Ipswich, right, in the United Kingdom.
That's right, about an hour's drive east of London.
Excellent. Okay, so I came across Lee. So Lee, he runs a website, GoPainGo.com. And a few weeks ago, I had Nicole Sachs on the show. Nicole, obviously, she's a licensed clinical social worker, and she talked a lot about her site, thecureforchronicpain.com. And I came across Lee maybe, I don't know, 3 months ago. And I think that the video that I saw, I don't even know how I ended up finding you, but you were doing, you were boxing with a heavy bag, I think in your backyard somewhere.
Oh yeah, that one.
So, I think that your story, from what I know about it, is fascinating. Like, you and I were not, when I think of like people in chronic pain, I usually think of like older people, kind of the image that we've had forever is like a 70-year-old person that's hunched over and they're in terrible pain, when in reality, yeah, like, I think there's a lot more people like you and I that are out there. Tell me about your story. What got you to look into this, and what was sort of your, this is my life-changing moment?
I think there was a few different moments, but like a lot of people out there with chronic pain, you see a lot of different specialists tell you a lot of different answers. No one really gives you a definitive answer of what's going on or the reasons for all this pain. And a lot of it was through trial and error. But one of my turning points was actually an ebook by a gentleman called Adam Ruskowski. And he was the first person to introduce me to emotions as in the relation to chronic pain. And I was like, how? And he was telling me, suggesting writing these things down. And I was like, how on earth is emotions related to chronic pain? I mean, how can that work? I mean, if we're talking about this physical pain, which I'm in agony, and you're asking me about something which happened 10, 20 years ago. Yeah. It made no sense whatsoever. But for a couple of dollars, the ebook was, I thought I'd give it a go. And that was a turning point for me. It was I'll tell you what it was like. It was like switching on the light switch in a dark room.
Yeah, definitely. What were some of the, what started happening, or now that you're kind of in tune with what, ultimately what the root cause was, like what was going on in your life when the symptoms started? I think a lot of times for us, like once that light switch goes on, we think back to when the pain started and it's like, oh yeah, like that makes sense. For you, what was going on when that pain started, and what kind of pain were you having?
Yeah, I think it was an accumulation of lots of different things. So I think typically mentioning what you just mentioned a while back about your typical 70-year-old person, I think what tends to happen with young men of maybe our generation, and especially above, you're kind of not encouraged to explore your emotions. You know, big boys don't cry. You have these kind of these silly sayings going around. So I think just general suppression and repression over time from a lot of mild, very kind of small traumas, you know, which build up over time, and then pain kind of builds up over time as well. For me, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And so, like, for you, so the light switch turned on. How long did it take you to go from, you know, because in the bio on your website, you talk about how long it really took, or sorry, how much pain you were in. You know, you were laying in bed, you couldn't really get up. Like for me personally, I would lean over to like pick up a barbell because weightlifting was such a big part of my life for so many years.
Yeah.
And then I got to the point where I would lean over to just pick up an empty barbell and I would, my neck would shoot into spasm. Right. And eventually I just gave it up for about 6 months until my light switch went off. So how long was it for you before you went from, gosh, I'm in the most terrible pain of my life, to I feel okay enough to start being myself again?
I mean, I spent a lot of time in chronic pain looking and trying with different specialists. But as soon as I found the mind-body connection, I would say initially I reckon maybe 80% of the pain went away in the first 6 months.
Yep.
Then the final 20%, I would say, took about 2 years to get rid of completely.
Yeah. And it seems like there's all these theories about people that can read Sarno's books, for instance, and that alone cures them. But I haven't been, I mean, I've obviously read the anecdotes from people that say that, but it sounds to me like it's much more people that are in it for weeks, months, maybe even years. But I think that the main thing is that, like, I heard this great quote from one of Nicole Sachs's patients where he said, "I'm not 100% pain free. I'm cured. I'm just not healed." Is that probably how you would describe for you?
Yeah, that sounds really, really good. I mean, in my experience working with people, I tend to find the people that have this instant cure from reading, say, for example, Dr. Sarno's books. It's absolutely fantastic, and it, at the very least, it encourages you that you're on the right path. But what I tend to notice, they tend to relapse kind of quick.
Yep.
But this kind of gradual bit by bit kind of, because I mean, if we think about how long it takes you to, for your body to give you these messages of pain, you know, I mean, they're intense messages, you know, they'll put you on your back, won't they? you know, if you say, for example, it takes 10 years to build up to that severe symptoms, you know, it's kind of unrealistic to think that it's going to happen overnight.
Right.
The cure. So I think systematically, bit by bit, you know, spending half hour a day doing different things which work for you is going to get you the results you want.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so what were some of the, you know, you said that it was like, I have my own methods, like for instance, a lot of the things that help me, and especially when I have like real intense moments or even days of high stress. I mean, I can feel it towards the end of the day or sometimes, you know, halfway through the day where it's like, gosh, my neck is so locked up. And 6 months ago, it was, okay, I better schedule an appointment with this other physician. But now it's that maybe I'll spend 30 minutes on my journaling today instead of 15 or 20 minutes on my journaling today. And usually by the time that I get to the end of that 30 minutes, if I feel like it's an incredibly taxing day, any additional pain that was added due to the stress or something that happened that day is gone by the time those 30 minutes are over. And then I feel like today I woke up. Today was the best I felt waking up in a long time. Because usually it's like there's also the conditioning part of it, right? Like if you go to bed every day for a year or more than that, and you're in pain, and then every day for a year you wake up and you're in pain, you still have that Pavlov's dog thing going on, right? Like you know that when you get up, you're going to be in pain. So that cycle has been a little bit tougher to break. But for me, I think like the psychology behind actually just getting back in the gym and being active again, which is so much of what Dr. Sarno teaches, it's really teaching that nervous system to just chill the hell out and like, hey man, it's going to be okay.
Definitely retraining the brain, you know, but most definitely, you know, behave and act in a way which a healthy body would do.
Were you, Were you like a, so I see like you're a fitness instructor too, and you're what, you know, you're really into this, into the physical side of it. Was that you before you started having your pain incidents? Like, were you an active person before that started?
Yeah, I was. I used to do a lot of weights. Okay. Different martial arts, boxing, and things like that. Then I had, then obviously the chronic pain started that put me out for a couple of years. Then I started again, basically, you know, all the boxing and kickboxing, weightlifting, bits and pieces. But what I could say, actually, is the way and the motivation behind the training was different before and now. You know, so for example, doing all the weights when I was younger before the chronic pain probably come from a place of insecurities.
Yep.
You know, whereas now it comes from a place of well-being and thriving.
And even just having fun, right? I think like...
And just enjoyment. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we almost forget, like I remember I was sitting in my boss's office once and I was just in a bad mood and she could tell I was in a bad mood and she was like, why are you in a bad mood? And I told her like, God, I haven't made my scheduled lifts on my weightlifting program for almost a month. And it's like, it's just really aggravating me. I just want to quit. And she's like, she didn't understand why I was so wound up about it. And now thinking back, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty stupid. Like, cause things just started like triggering me to feel I think it's just amazing that the work that you're doing and the work that so many other people are doing, myself are doing, is not like widely accepted. Like I was talking to a woman this morning and I got my notes for the call here. So I was taking notes as we were talking, but she was telling me about all the different issues that she's had. Okay. So she's put on a lot of weight since her chronic pain started. And she has fibromyalgia, she has sciatica, she has nerve problems and all these kinds of things. And she's been doctor to doctor. And I told her, and I was, you know, trying to be sensitive to her. Cause the thing is like, and I think you can relate to this, that the first moment where you looked and saw this piece about it being mind, body or emotions, you were probably, you know, you kind of like brushed it off to the side. Like how can that, you know, I'm a man, right? Like the doctors have all the answers. And I told her that my opinion, after studying so much about fibromyalgia, because I'd been told that hey, this could be what you have, is that it's kind of like the doctors they don't know what it is. And fibromyalgia just kind of gets, I mean, that's as general of a statement as saying you have knee pain, right? Like, duh, I know that. And so for her, she's still, and I told her, you know, it's okay. If you don't have the belief there yet, it's going to come. Like I'm like, I it took me months from when the first doctor, who's a very well respected doctor, and she is a physician, she does, you know, she's an orthopedic physician, and so for her skin in the game would have normally been, Eddie, it's your neck, or Eddie, it's your back. But she examined me fully and said, what's your stress level like, and you know, are you upset about things? Or, and I was just, it's like, what is this lady talking about? And it took me another couple of months before I even connected two and two. And I wish that I would have listened earlier. But I told this woman that I talked to this morning, like, hey, you'll get there. But all these things you're describing, fibromyalgia, sciatica, nerve problems, like I lived through that. I know exactly what you're going through. And when you're ready, just give me a call, kind of a thing.
Yeah, you planted the seeds, you know, and it'll grow one day.
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope so. I told her, I suggested to go and watch the John Stossel 2020 and go read Dr. Sarno's book. I'm like, it's $8. You know, this will at least get you exposure to the idea. Because once you're ready, you and I can do one-on-one stuff and I can work with you in that sense. Tell me about, so one thing that I'm interested in, I don't know if this is, I don't know if there's anything to this, but in the United Kingdom, you have universal healthcare, right?
Yeah, we have an NHS, National Health Service, yeah.
Okay, so, and they have that in Canada as well. I find overwhelmingly, so I'm in the States, I'm out of Seattle, but so we don't have universal healthcare here. I wish we did, but in Canada they do. And I have, if you were to look at the number, let's say that I have 100 people that send a form of interest to me and working with me, 85 of them are probably from Canada. And it makes me wonder, is there anything to universal healthcare and people being more accepting to this idea? I guess, you know, is your clientele primarily in the United Kingdom, or are you working with people all over the world?
All over the world, actually. Recently, two clients in Canada, talking about Canada. So that's quite interesting as well. I think obviously locally as well. I think we have the National Health Service. Then locally in local communities, you have your local GP. And because it's a National Health Service, they're very time restricted. So even if the doctor, I mean, there is a lot of doctors out there that know about the mind-body connection, but literally just haven't got the time to sit someone down and say, do you know what? What's going on in your life?
Right.
You know, they're, even if they wanted to ask that question, they get 10 minutes per patient.
Yep.
You know, and that's just not enough. You know, so they can probably get referred to a counsellor. But again, over here, there's probably a three-month waiting list.
Yeah. The wait lists are always a little, when I had shoulder surgery last year, I connected with somebody that lives in Manchester, and she told me about the wait list to get her shoulder surgery done. She was a highly sought after university athlete, and I don't know if that kicked her up on the priority list, but she ended up actually getting in pretty quick. She said that if she was not an athlete, maybe it wouldn't have been so quick. But I do find that pretty interesting. So, you know, run me through it here. How does your service work? How does your process work? You know, ultimately, like, how do you work with people? How do you help people?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I kind of have a bit of a free consultation, because it's important that they feel they can work with me, but it's also important that I feel I can work with them. So I don't charge for that. So it's about getting that mutual expectation. And then I have assessment forms, which kind of asks about background, family relationships, things like that. It tends to work in a three-stage process. What I've noticed is the first step is awareness. So it's about education, reading, for example, Dr. Sarnow's book. You know, it's about building that mind-body connection education up. And the second process tends to be about, okay, you know what's going on, you know the theory behind it, let's explore some of those emotions, let's have a look at some of them memories, you know, what's pissing you off,
yeah.
You know, what can we do about it, and show them tools and techniques to express them. They don't have to tell me, but things like journaling is brilliant, they can do it in private.
Yep.
And I really favour things which involve the body. You know, so things like exercise, punching, you know, anything to release it physically,
yep.
You know,
yep.
And release that energy. If you look at the animal kingdom, you know, every species in the world discharges energy,
yep.
After an attack. In, you know, humans, especially in the Western world, we tend to not encourage, if someone's crying, we naturally want to stop them crying,
yep.
You know, whereas really we're going to do better for the health to encourage it. You carry on crying, you know, so that's the second stage. And the third stage tends to be, okay, now really need to make the changes you need to make. So it might be, well, you know what, the job I'm in is not healthy. This has been highly contributed towards my pain and my distress.
Yep.
So it might be, you know, a job they want to change, a relationship they want to change, or it might be something more internal. Okay, you know what? My lack of confidence has really caused me a lot of frustration and a lot of suppressed emotions. Okay, I need to work on my confidence. And what I've noticed, if you cover all three of those bases, the pain goes away.
Do you have a general idea, your breakdown of clients between male and female? Mine are overwhelmingly female, but I'm a male and you're a male, and so I know this exists with us. What's a general, is it 50-50 for you, or is it different?
I would say it's 50-50,
okay.
or probably 60-40,
okay.
In favor of females.
Okay. I know that, like, fibromyalgia, for instance, which I feel like I've read, like, Steve Ozanizich books and a lot of these books around the topic, and fibromyalgia, I feel like you could just call tension algia, or you could call it TMS, because it seems like they're sort of one and the same. But I was reading a statistic that, like, females are, it's some absurd number. It's like 7 times more likely to get fibromyalgia than men. And one of the other, one of the things I was diagnosed with later on, before I found out, before the doctor had said, hey, look into other parts of your life, I don't think this is a physical problem. And she even had imaging in front of her. Like, she had EMGs and MRIs in front of her that said there's a problem. And she was looking at what I could do physically and said, you wouldn't be able to do those things if this imaging was correct. There's no way. And which is, you know, that's pretty powerful stuff. Like I want to write her an email now that it's been 6 months and say, hey, like I got my life back and I wish I would have just listened to you. You know what I mean? One of the other things I got diagnosed with was thoracic outlet syndrome, which is, you know, you get a pinching of the nerves and a lot of different parts of your body coming out of your neck or coming out of your pecs. And, you know, that it's all a result of muscle tension. But it's again, it's another thing where women are like four times more likely to get it. And the tension where it occurs is in the chest and then in the neck. And those are two of the most common places for this disorder, right? Mind body disorder.
Okay.
So, I mean, those are certainly some things to think about. So, like, is it daily exercises that you have your clients on? Like, journaling, meditation, and breathing exercises. I mean, on top of workouts, for me, is really sort of like the perfect cocktail of the mind portion of it. For you, it sounds like it was, like, physical outlets, journaling. Was there anything else that you personally did to really sort of rid yourself away, especially the last 20% of your healing?
I think it's definitely changing perception, you know, like reframing things. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is great. It's kind of finding, it's hard to describe really. I think definitely changing perception is one. So for example, challenging every belief which you've got, you know, listening carefully to the words you're using. You know, because before that process of speaking, you're thinking it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, we know it's the thoughts which are a main contributor towards attention. So, really listening to the words I'm speaking.
Definitely.
You know, and if they're very negative, then that's obviously going to cause a lot of tension.
Right.
You know, so just reframing is there a positive way I can look at this
as a learning experience as opposed to, well, this sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I had asked, so you're an NLP practitioner too, right?
Yeah.
So I was speaking to a guy and another NLP practitioner in the United States, a few days ago, not for this. I was just talking to him, but I was asking about, okay, so like somebody's healed, they're better. How do they basically prevent this kind of thing from happening again? And his explanation was similar to yours. Just again, sort of different outlooks. It's like, I always say like I'm a pessimist by nature, but there are certainly in the last year before I started having a lot of pain, everything was bad on the outside. Like, every situation I saw, I was a victim, right? Like, people are doing something negative to me. And even in the last like few days, I feel like there's been an instance of me being wronged in a couple different ways by people. But what I've noticed from myself is that like, two things. Like, first, I'm like, well, that person is screwing me over, but so what? Like, having kind of a so what attitude. But then also like, well, what else is going on? Or maybe what's the story behind why they're acting the way they're acting, as opposed to just jumping to they're coming after me. You know what I mean? And it's interesting. You talk about every animal in the animal kingdom has a way of being able to release stress. I'm reading, have you ever read the book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers?
No.
So my therapist recommended to me, it's this book about animals in nature, including mammals, humans, and it talks about the physiology behind this and the whole idea, like why zebras don't have, you know, they don't have mind body attacks, they don't get ulcers, they don't get these kinds of ailments that get humans, especially in the last 30, 40 years. Is that when they get a predator that's chasing after them, once they outrun that predator or the crisis is over, they go, you can YouTube these. It's pretty cool. That they get these like shivers, they sit there and they shake and they convulse.
Yes.
And then once it's over and they don't think about it anymore. It's crazy, right? that
it's
this is a thing.
Energy.
Yeah. And I wish that like humans had something that they could do. And who knows, like maybe if there wasn't so much social conditioning around, not like you said, boys don't cry and all these different things, that who knows, maybe we would start convulsing and not have to feel about pain anymore, like a zebra, right? How cool that would be.
That'd be excellent. And our body tells us, you know, I had a client the other week, it was like, I just feel like screaming. I just feel like screaming, she said. And I said, well, scream. You know, your body is telling you to scream. But the social conditioning over time just would not allow her to do it.
Yep.
And I said, you know, okay, fair enough. Don't scream running down the road. You know, that'll get you locked up. But in your car, you know, in your car, screaming to a pillow in private, if you're going 70 miles per hour down a motorway, you can scream.
Yeah.
You know, no one's there. But the social condition is just so ingrained and so imprinted that for some people, they just at the moment, they just can't.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. It's really kind of changed. One of the really good benefits, I think, of going through this whole experience for me personally is like it's actually changed the way I parent. You talked about when people cry, the automatic, like if you and I were next to each other and you and I didn't know about this stuff and you started crying, I want to console you and say, no, don't cry. It's okay. That's what I was doing with my daughter for the first 3 years of her life. And then suddenly I changed the tone where it was just, I just embrace and hug and I don't say anything. Or I'll just tell her that it's going to be okay. Keep crying. You know, it's all right. Like let it out sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I have so much sensitivity around, I don't want it to be 20 years from now and she is repressing issues still and thinking back to like, God, I was so upset when I, and some of the stuff is stupid, right? Like she kicks her foot on a toy or something, but, you know, those things are valid too. Like whatever it is that makes somebody upset is valid, right? Like that's how they see the world, which is why I think what you're talking about and changing the perception is such an important part of not having a relapse, because they change how they see the world, right? Like, there's this great poet on YouTube named Prince A, and he says, I reposted his quote a couple of days ago on my Instagram, but he had said like, we're in charge of how we see the world, you know, like that's the kind of power that we have. And I think that people get so jaded as they get older through conditioning that they don't see the world as a good place anymore.
Definitely, yeah. And it's about challenging your own beliefs, isn't it? You know, and this is what I love about the mind-body concept, you know, is that really you want to move from a place from pain or illness to health.
Yep.
Okay. But the beautiful kind of byproduct is that your relationships improve.
Yep.
Your relationships with your family, your girlfriend, boyfriend, daughter, parents, you know what I mean? It kind of all improves. Your relationship with money, with work, you know, it's a byproduct which improves the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, especially like the authentic relationships. What I have found is that my relationships that weren't all that authentic have gotten worse, and the ones that are authentic are better. Somebody asked, I can't remember who it was, I think it might have been my mom, but asked my wife, you got a new husband, is it improved? And she, without hesitation, said yes. And I think that a lot of that is around, like, we've been together for 10 years, but I've never been this open, right? Like, I've never expressed the way I express, for good and bad. If she makes me mad, I feel better telling her now. If she makes me happy, I feel better telling her now. Like, and again, like, the conditioning is that, okay, like, if you're upset, you keep it to yourself. But really, like, is, you know, that's probably going to lead us to more problems than if we just let it out, right?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I'm sure that's what happens, you know, because we think that we're holding things together, but it comes out. It comes out either through your body, or it'll come out through a relationship, you know, it'll come out. So, you know, the more skills and techniques you can build and put in your toolbox to deal with life, you know, it's life, it's everyday problems that we all get. You know, I link it quite similar to, we talked about prevention, but say, for example, you get really thirsty, you know, already you're kind of a little bit dehydrated because you're thirsty.
Yep.
But if we sipped water throughout the day, we never experience that thirst.
Right. By the time that you have the symptom, it's probably been going on for a while, whether it's thirst or whether it's pain, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But if we're throughout the day just checking into our body, like having a sip of water, journaling, you know, just 15 minutes in the day, you know, when you're commuting or whatever, you know, it's just having a sip of water.
Yep.
You kind of very, very rarely going to experience those symptoms.
Yeah, certainly. What's maybe like a cool, because we're coming up to the time that that I had promised I'd take from you. I know it's later there in the UK. What's maybe like a cool story? Like, I have certain clients over the years for weight loss and for performance nutrition that I take more pride in than others. Is there like a particular client story where they were in such dire straits, you were able to bring them out of it, and like a good, you know, something that you feel yeah. good about daily? What's maybe a cool story you can tell?
Yeah, I'm very privileged. I've got a couple, you know, I've got a few. But what I've noticed is, say, for example, one client, and you can YouTube him because he's very successful, like in what he does now. So a few years back, chronic pain, in bed, very conditioned about what he can and can't do. And we kind of broke through that. But then after a while, he got better and thought, you know what, I need a break from whatever problems were causing him the symptoms over here. So off he goes to Bali. And then starts doing this kind of raw food kind of product, like cooking and ingredients. And now he's on YouTube giving lots of daily advice, being very authentic himself.
Yep.
And it's just beautiful to see, because I'm subscribed to his YouTube channel. It's Inspired by Nature. And I just kind of watch his kind of feeds and what he talks about. And it's just very, very insightful, very transparent, very authentic, very spiritual, you know, and just watching him grow has been, yes, it's been priceless, fantastic, love it.
Yeah,
love
yeah, it. No, I'll check that guy out for sure.
Yeah.
And what's maybe the other one? I know you said you had a couple.
It tends to be people who kind of up and go. So someone else who I've just worked with as, again, through the coaching process, realized, you know what they're doing for work is not them, you know. So they've packed it all in, sold everything on eBay, and they've gone off to Thailand.
That's awesome. You know?
So it's amazing. It's amazing the potential of the coaching process.
Yeah, for sure. It was no mind body relation stuff. In fact, the guy left the company I was working at before I even started working there. But there was this famous story about a guy that worked there, one of the best sales reps in the company. You know, he probably made a couple hundred thousand US per year every year, and then one day was just kind of like, I need a change, and quit.
Yeah.
And went to go sell sunglasses on the beach in Hawaii for $8 an hour. Right.
Wow.
Just, you know, you save your money and maybe you need a life change. I tend to see too that like the people that suffer from this stuff in a lot of ways are high performing people, right? And it's probably because they put so much pressure on themselves all the time to be these amazing performers and whatever it is they're doing. There's a really interesting story. So like Lady Gaga, the musician, she's one.
Yeah.
She's got chronic pain, fibromyalgia, a lot of these problems. And Nicole Sachs, the psychologist that I interviewed, has reached out to her a few times to say like, hey, yeah, I know that this is the way out. But another one is Andrew Luck, who plays American football for the Indianapolis Colts. And he had the exact same shoulder surgery I had a year and a half ago. And he just cannot get well. He cannot get better. There's something that's continuing to cause a problem. He hasn't gotten back on the field. And I'm thinking about all the circumstances. He replaced probably, if not the best quarterback of all time, the second best quarterback of all time. And he was the number one pick, biggest contract, expected to be one of the best in the history of the franchise. And then he hasn't lived up to expectation. He hasn't been as good as people thought he was going to be. And then he got injured. Like, that's an enormous amount of pressure, right? And I think that this is it's just not a good, even if you have a real injury, like, I feel like if you're in sort of this high stress or high emotion environment, it's not giving your body the right environment to heal from an actual problem.
Yeah, definitely. Tranquility promotes healing without a doubt.
Yep.
And watching athletes is really interesting, because as you know, that in training, they're doing whatever movements over and over and over again, whatever drills they're doing, over and over and over again.
Yep.
But then when the pressure's on, for example, in a competition, game, whatever it may be, injuries, mind-body injuries, I perceive them pop up.
Yep.
You know, but the body's fully adapted to it.
Right. Right.
You,
right.
You know, so it's something else.
Yeah, absolutely. And then something where that central nervous system loop. Another interesting thing to me too is if you just type into Google chronic pain, there's an image of somebody on the right that is like, it's their brain and then it's all these different body parts and these signals are going back and forth on it. And like to me, what that image says is it's an overactivity of the nervous system. And whenever I hear about people getting prescribed opioids, and like the United States, we have like 10% of the world's population, and we take 70% of the prescription drugs in the world.
Yeah.
And the opioids, the painkillers, are always paired with an antidepressant. And so, like when I look at that and when I hear that, I just say, how are we getting this so wrong? If we're making the leap to say you need to take an antidepressant in addition to this painkiller, how are we not looking at it saying it is a emotional rooted mental health problem far more than it is an actual physical pain problem? And that's why I think, like, from now on, like, if I've got a pain, I feel like I need to go see my therapist and not go and see a doctor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a cultural shift. It's a mindset, like a mindset shift, which I do think is happening. I mean, the world's got smaller by the internet. I mean, we're talking to each other from the opposite side of the world.
Yep.
You know, it's fantastic. You know, and because of this, I think that people see different explanation for things, you know, and they can choose. So I do think a shift is happening, but you're right. I mean, if you got an alien down from space and you said, okay, yeah, this is what's happening, you know, they look at you thinking, what? You know, this is madness.
yeah, definitely. No, I know. How would you, I guess, in let's say in 10 years, how different do you see it being? Do you see a big shift, or do you think it's just going to be sort of a lot of little mini shifts and we're still 20, 30, 40 years away from any kind of a serious change?
No, I think it's going to build up momentum, actually, because if I compare over the last 10 years, you know, it's shifted a huge amount.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was looking into this, there was maybe 3 books I had access to, you know what I mean, to read. But now I've got a bookshelf full of them.
Yep.
You know, so, been to conferences, like-minded people to talk to, i.e. yourself, you know, there's just so many people out there now with similar interests, and the social media is fantastic. So I predict it's going to snowball in the next 10 years. And in fact, this is the way things are going.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, because people are just not satisfied. You know, they're going to different specialists. They're having different medications. And over time, they're realizing, you know what? This is just masking the symptoms.
Yep.
You know, and what are symptoms? The messages from our body.
Well, and even like the money, I have health insurance. And when I was going through all this, I still spent close to probably $10,000 on getting well again. And then it ended up being, well, the cure was a book for $8 and a journal and a computer that I already owned. So like, and I'm literally, my wife handed me 2 more bills on Sunday night, of practitioners that I saw in the springtime. That are saying, hey, here's the, you know, back in March and April, here's another bill from that procedure that you had done on my neck. And it's like, gosh, if I could have just found this stuff a year ago. But you know, that's like, then it never would have led like you and I to be talking about this right now, right? I didn't go through that.
I mean, when it comes to that, things like that, you just got to believe that things happen at the right time.
Definitely.
You know, but economics, huge part of it. And I'll just tell you a little story. So there was a lady, an auntie of a friend of mine. She wants to work with me, all right? But she had a fall years ago, and the solicitors, the lawyers have got involved, and she's kind of on the brink of a good payout.
Yeah.
And obviously part of this, the solicitor gets commission, so it's in his interest as well. So she wants to work with me. It's undoubtedly a mind-body related problem, right? Undoubtedly. She knows that, I know it, her solicitor knows it. Her solicitor advised her, you know what? Now's not the best time to get better.
Yep. And it's just, it's,
can you imagine that?
It's insane, right? I, when I hear that, it's just like, it almost like sends shivers down my spine. Because
I know.
You have the, but you know, money over the, yeah, I mean, that's, it's pretty wild for sure. That, well, and that's how, like, in the United States, we're so litigious that that wouldn't surprise me at all if I heard that story here, like that, that's something that, you know, that was the sentiment from somebody that's supposed to be representing you, right? Like, it should be in their best interest, you as a human, but, and the thing is, like, I would wonder too, even after they get the payout, like, what, if they get well, say they get the payout and then they go and they work with you and a month later, they're okay. Can they be cited for fraud or something like that after the fact? Like, that's a concern that I would have too. Yeah. Like, we're such a lawsuit happy Western world. Whereas if you look at cultures like in India and a lot of these places where, you know, there's Buddhism and there's meditation and relaxation is valued and de-stressing and decompressing and shorter work schedules and things like that, like, you just don't have the same kinds of issues and you're not having people sue each other over things like that. It's just wild, you know?
Yeah, very interesting, the kind of the motives and things and the whole driving force behind health and how it's related, like, intertwined with economics.
Yep.
You know, it's very interesting. But really, I think just one person at a time, just, you know, it's a shift in responsibility as well, you know, which I think is the main point. It's kind of like, okay, it's your body, it's your mind, you're responsible.
Yep.
You know, the symptoms, that they're not anybody else's fault.
Right.
You know, and it's not a blame game, but the moment you can take responsibility, it's so empowering.
Yeah.
You know, it's empowering that, okay, you know, I am in a bit of a mess at the moment, but I can and I will do something about it.
Yep. Yeah, and once you sort of accept that, there's nobody else really that you can put the burden or the blame on anymore either. Like, it is on you, and it is your responsibility to get better, and it's fully in your power to get better. It's one of the most empowering things that I've had happen in my life to say, hey, when something is awry, like I just got done having a cold that normally would last me 2 weeks, but I had it for about 3 days. And I think I think that a lot of that was like, no, like, I knew exactly a certain thing happened right when it started. And then a certain thing happened right when it was at its apex. And as soon as I said, this is the worst that it's going to get, and I know why it's at its worst at this moment, I woke up today and my throat's better, right? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I can echo that. I changed because I got a day job as well.
Yeah.
So I changed that recently and, had a cold and things. But exactly the same as yourself, really. I knew what was happening. You know, journaled it all out, done some meditation. You know, 3 days later, I'm better.
Yep. Yeah, it's good. What a gift we have to be able to do that. Even if it's just for ourselves and not for other people, I feel like it almost makes me, invincible in a lot of ways when I'm lifting weights now too, which is cool.
It's a good technique. I've been watching your technique. I had some coaching lessons with weightlifting.
Yeah,
and it just made me appreciate the intricate technique and timing of it all.
Oh my God. Because I had been, like I said, I was off 6 months from doing any of that. And the first day, so I read Sarno's book and I finished his book in 3 days. But when I got through the first third of it, I went in the garage and I did just cleans that day. And I did 60 kilos. And then the next day I did snatches and I did 60 kilos. And I forgot, there is muscle memory. That is a thing. But the timing of, like, If you do the final pull on the bar and it's 1 inch lower than it should be, the whole thing goes awry. And how wild it is that these little minuscule things can impact the whole operation so much.
Definitely. So. Yeah, and there's probably a metaphor in there somewhere, isn't there, with life?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. For sure. Well, Lee. Hey, man. Thanks so much for sitting here and talking with me. This has been a lot of fun. Like I said, so GoPainGo.com, right? That's where they can find you. And so there's the website, and then where else could they find you?
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, website.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm on. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, YouTube. As well. I've got a few videos on YouTube. I'm going to make a few more.
Cool. Okay. Hey, Lee, thanks so much again.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right, man. Take care.